Oh, yes, I did. I've probably. Okay, 21st of September, close to the equinox. Welcome back. We won't go into what we were just discussing off air, so one of those things. Who saw the Switzer interview? My 15 minutes of fame, did people see it? Yeah, didn't watch it? You missed me with a tie on.
And a suit.
Couldn't recognise him.
I didn't have to put makeup on, but the shoes, well, you didn't have to be important shoes, but I had an interesting experience. I just wanted to spend 5 minutes, not even five, 2 minutes, just explaining that, because it eats into, or it has over the last few years, it has quite substantially eaten into time where I could have, perhaps even should have been trading, and it's eaten into time where I could have and perhaps should have been researching stuff as well, but I just wanted to try and explain that in a certain sense, because, and one of the reasons why I did it and why I can sort of stop now in a sense is because if you can cast your mind back when you went to school, I was there always, remember, always in the class there was always somebody sitting down the back, the young kid that just too embarrassed to do anything, couldn't get a word out. I was one of those right at school. I always had a lot to say, but for me to get up in front of a group of people and start talking was utterly impossible. Not only was it impossible, I actually would get up there, and this is at school from about the time I was 10 till about 16, maybe a month, and freeze. Totally freeze, like this. It was just something, it was just whatever was up here, just something that I had to try and progress through. Anyway, when I started with all some of the research and the stuff I was interested in, and I was running, helping a family with a family business, where the family business back in 87 and prior to 88 before that employed 300 people. So I'm the boss's son in a sense, and I've come in as, and I was production manager. I had to deal with everybody in the factory, because everything, the whole factory shut down unless I could get the whole coordination right. That's something I had to learn. And I just needed to learn to be able to deal with people and to talk to a crowd of workers if you had things to explain. You know, I had to deal with union people, all those things. So I went and did a CAE course, 92, somewhere there, but to try and deal with these things. And early then, 88, it went extraordinarily difficult. But what I was lucky with when I did it was a public speaking course. It was my turn to speak on the second week, and I tell you what, I damn near didn't go. But at that time, I was living in a house in Malden with three other guys. It was a really good bachelor type house. The house was haunted. Now, I know I could go into lots of stories about that, but it really was. We did end up, you know, we were, I don't know, several of us, black and blue, we saw a ghost that we'll swear that. So it was an interesting story. But anyway, at the presentation I gave, I spoke for what I thought was about 5 minutes, and my story about how I lived in a haunted house. Turns out I spoke, there was 15 people, much like this. I ended up speaking for about half an hour and had the people so captivated with that little talk. It was just unbelievable. Then I realised that's when I knew I could talk, right? So from there on, it became for me, the markets for me, it's not always about money. Obviously you've got to make a living, but it's not always about that. It is, if you're in the market solely to make money, I don't think you'll end up doing very well. It's got to be also a little bit about personal development and discovering what it is you're good at and what you can do. So I've come full circle now, because 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, there is no way I could have appeared on live TV. It's just not something I could have done, I can tell you. So now I felt I've progressed that. It's more a personal development thing. So now that particularly stuff is finished. So for the next, I wanted to explain it, because for the next few months it is time to get serious and upscale the possibilities that GAN shows, because I think, as you've seen with some of the research, we've got good ideas about how GAN is doing his forecasting now. So now we've got a situation where we've put through the forum for everybody so that people can load stuff on. So whatever it is you're watching, you can share it. When you share it, somebody else will share something else, and we can all keep these eyes on the market. So I feel that was the reason I did it. It's got nothing to do. The reason I did it, from my point of view, was more personal development. Now, people tell me I do speak quite well in public now, and I can do this and do that and whatever else, but I can tell you, still, sometimes when I get up behind a podium or I'm sitting down at the desk, I tell you, when I was with the TV like that, I'm astounded that somebody didn't see the table going up. My knees were going up and down. I can tell you. Anyway, round of applause for Phil, because... so now it's time to move on. So I'm very happy with all of that, because it came through quite well, I think. It was good. All right, I said we'd do a quick review of the indicators first up, because always what I try and do is to position where we are in the cycle. And so you've got your first page of your handout there. And let me open that up so I can bring it up, actually. I knew there was something I forgot to open up. So you should be able to see, first up, there's two or three things as far as cyclical stuff and about what when you forecast, you've got to have in mind what the fundamentals are doing, in a sense. So the first thing we can look at is the US yield curve. And that should take us up to about August of 2010. And you can see it's a very wide spread in the curve. Now, a wide spread, and of course, the copy you've got is black and white. So the federal funds rate is the one that is slightly darker and more volatile of the line. So in other words, it's going to be, if I can put a pointer up, it's going to be that line there is the Fed funds line. It's almost stuck down at zero at the moment. So we're at this line here. And generally, reading the yield curve, which is just simply a comparison of the 10-year bond versus the short-dated federal funds rate, generally you can see that when the Federal Reserve pushes interest rates up, the federal funds rate up, when it goes negative, which is above the 10-year bond, it's a signal that the Fed is trying to slow down the economy. It's usually, it can signal a recession might be approaching. Now, as I've said many times here before, but for those who haven't been here so often, in my view, and this is what nobody else has ever seemed to be able to do, the key to that yield curve like that is to interpret it in the context of the real estate cycle. So, for example, when you get a yield curve that inverted in 2005 and 2006, towards the end of 14 years of going up in the real estate cycle, that's the red light flashing. That's the key, really. And so everybody was alerted to that when it happened, for those who were around then. You can see going back into 1991, you can see the inversion. And certainly you saw it in 1974, again, quite significant inversion. And even just the general recessions that the US has seen, there's an inversion, would have been 1900, it was very hard to copy these into Word. That was about 1966 or thereabouts, through there. So the yield curve at the moment, it's what's called steep, which is the federal funds rate, the short-dated curve, the short-dated interest rates, way below the federal funds rate. When that's the case, as it was just after 2001, as it was in 1993, 1994, that's the usually signaling economic recovery. One of the reasons you get the recovery is because, and as I explained in Secret Life, in page 291, I think it is, or 298, it is an absolute no-brainer at the moment for the banks.
They borrow short at practically zero, and they lend long. In other words, they can borrow as much money as they want from the Fed at an interest rate of 0.25%, 0.25%, and they simply invest it by buying long-term bonds. It's a no-brainer. It must make money. Something the public never get told to do. What's more, you'll have quite a number of fund managers at the moment. They'll borrow from the public, borrow leverage again by borrowing short and just buying the bonds. Now that process will continue for some years now. Now if you go back and check history, back in the previous real estate cycle, that process came to a finish, the easy money came to a finish on February the 4th, 1994. Now if you go back and have a look at your charts about what happened then, you'll find it was a top in the stock market. And so for 1994, the rest of that year, stocks trended down for the whole year. Now I think if you use some of Gann's 18.6 type information, you could say that this process could easily continue till about 2013. Well, you might get a similar scenario where something will cause a top in the market according to Gann's 18.6 theory. Now that something could be a reversal of Fed policy. Yes? Which would lead to perhaps 2013, 2014 being a bear year of some sort. Make sense? Just something to note. It's just something fundamental. That's all. You just try and... It's an educated guess in a sense, but it's just something to watch. Because I can tell you, you know, whilst this process is going on, whilst the spread is so wide, and with the Fed printing so much money, you buy stocks. That's just what you do.
So why have you got the opposite November 2010 here, that the rates up around 5%?
I think it's just the scaling on the charts.
Yeah.
It's not right.
It's
They're wrong.
It goes up to people in there.
Yeah. Yes. If you have a look on the website, you'll see a more official chart. It's just that with getting those from Excel into Word and then expanding it a little bit, it just put the scaling a bit wrong. But
you're
going to
have to ignore the
dates back there.
Possibly, yes. Yes. Yeah, I didn't pick that up.
Because the recession that looks like it comes out about March 78, that was actually about 74.
Yeah, look at that. I did see that. I'll have to check that.
And the recession that looks like it comes out about July 94 actually happened in about 92.
What I'll do is... I can't bring up the Excel program at the moment, but... Yeah, it must have scaled that by... When I copied and pasted, it must have... Why would it do that? Scaled it wrong.
Excel.
I don't know. Excel, yeah. All right, good pick up. I didn't see that. I just cut and paste. So I'll have to check that one. Might have done the same. I don't think... If you turn over to page 2, we've got the Australian yield curve. It doesn't look like what you've got up there, does it?
Yeah.
Is it though?
Yeah, it does. I think this is right.
Because on what you've got printed, same as mine, you've got the dates printed. Whereas on that image there, they don't come out. Gremlins. Who knows? I've printed off the same thing there. Who knows? Anyway, the image there you've got on your handout is accurate. Slightly different scenario in Australia because you've got the yield curve really approaching parity in a sense. Generally, when that happens, it indicates sideways movement in the economy, really, neither up nor down, stable in a sense. Slightly different in Australia. We might be slightly facing slightly different scenario in a sense. And this gives me weight. You've just got to wait to see. You know, Australia could easily be shifting to aligning with China rather than so much influence from the US. As I said, it could be interesting what happens there. Anyway, it's not inverted. And it doesn't look like anything to worry about at the moment, except that I don't think that Australia's Reserve Bank will want to see interest rates go up such that it causes an inversion. I don't think that's what they want to see. So I think in the next 6 months, 12 months, you might see a lot of what they call jawboning by the boss, which is a political statement, to say that rates, he'll probably come out saying, yes, rates will have to go up. If he starts saying that, it generally means that they'll stay sideways for a while. All right, so just...
The futures market are currently betting 80%...
That there's a rate coming, yes. Yes. November. Yeah, well, the Australian dollar going up, the same thing. So there may be one coming. But what I'm suggesting is, if he comes out and says that there could be a lot more, and it, you know, tries to prepare people for it, that's just your way.
So he did that the other day.
Yes,
the speech in Shepparton or something, where he said rates.
Yes. Anyway, we'll see. I don't have his mind, so we'll see what it is. But perhaps we'll get it pans out. And on page number 3, the rule of 20. Just simply the PE ratio of the all industrials added to the inflation rate. It's just a general guide, which I'm certain a lot of fund managers use for a quick valuation of the market. And I just look at it particularly at extremes. And when you can see, when you get around, you can see there January to March of 2009, you can see that. And I think I said on the website at the time, shares don't stay that cheap for very long. And when the fund managers see that type of valuation, they'll start piling in. So this does tend to give a bit of an extra guide. It doesn't mean heaps of things, but it just does help you look at having a bit of confidence about when markets can turn a little, when they're extreme valuation, when they're under the... All I wanted to say there. I'm going to say more about that in a minute. The other thing I wanted to do about that, which I should have had on the board already, as we go through today, let's remember there are three things and three things only that create wealth. Tonight, if you relate everything you see to that little diagram, it's an enormously helpful. I'll show you what I mean. So, market patterns after extremes is what I wanted to show next. So you're going to have that diagram, which is looks better there. So here's where I get to sit down for a minute. Notice, this is really common. You'll find after all real estate-led recessions, you end up with a market top, which was in October of 2007. And again, there we go. October of 2007, all the way down to March of 2009, and then back up towards the middle into April of 2010. It's a very common pattern after major recessions. And what I tried to show as to help with the investing. In Gant's book, Truth of the Stock Tape, he talks about stocks that lead, stocks that follow, stocks that go sideways, don't do anything. And it's very helpful as you went through 2009. Now, we're doing a little bit of this in hindsight, but this is what helps me write my email. As you go through 2009, as you see markets recovering, and as you get even into 2010, it's very helpful to have a look at charts with the index in mind. So you have a look at the bottom of March of 2009. So if we were to call up BHP, so you've got there the two charts, one under the other. So I'm just going to bring up BHP now. Can you, if you notice, with the All Ordinaries Index, can you see, well, you all know this already, the All Ords came back by half, 50% exactly, by April of 2010, yes? You're familiar with that. BHP, notice, BHP bottomed, let's get the date, I think it was on November, it was in November of 08. Can everybody see that? Or was it, no, it was, November. See there? November of 08 was the bottom. Now look, you wouldn't have known that at the time. Don't try misunderstanding me, but by the time March came around of 2009, it was actually a higher bottom. So as we went through 2009, BHP also, as it came up way higher than its 50% retracement. Gant shows you if you have that sort of analysis, it's telling you leading and lagging stocks. So there's a leading stock, because the bottom first. Resources. Now it's a big stock, BHP. Again, at the moment, it's stayed well above 50%. In fact, the 50% retracement was probably there back in about June of 2009. And it's gone up again. Now it's come back by half again of that move. So this is not a sign of weakness in that stock, in the big picture. So you get a leading stock. Now you can have a look, you can compare this as you're going, and this is the reason why you might do that for trading purposes may not be obvious yet, but this is how Gant tries to show you how to read a chart, because if you can get to read a chart, it will help you better read the economy. So if we pull up ANZ, ANZ bottomed in February. And as the market continued to come down in March, this stock was heading upwards. Again, it's gone back up above its 50% retracement and then held above that on the way back this year, above 50% of that move from 2009 up into the end of 2009 to the beginning of 2010. Now, if you have a look at the bank stocks, the market tends to know well in advance which particular stocks in which sectors are the strongest or the weakest. So if we were to call up CBA, same again. Bottomed in February. I'll just confirm that that was February. Well, CBA, in fact, bottomed in January. The lowest price was in January. Probably the CBA, you would say that that's the bank, that's the strongest bank in the banking sector on the market, as judged by the share price. Almost no retracement at all through there. Can people see that? Now you compare that to NAB. NAB bottomed in March. And since then, has only really just struggled to get back by half. On a monthly basis, it couldn't stay above the 50% retracement back into November of 2009. Since then, it's gone back by half again of that initial run. There. In fact, it went below the 50% mark back through April. Can everybody see that? A clear indication that of the banks, the National Bank is the weakest. The market knows that at the bottoms. Because you can determine that by which month they bottom, related to the index and related to its peers. Everybody see that? So if you get to learn to read the market, that's what I was telling you. Now that can be helpful throughout 2009, it's gone now, but it can be helpful about determining which banks you might have options, puts and other things, about which ones might be the strongest. Gann shows that, he taught that in his book. The habits of stocks, stocks that are weakest, stocks that are strongest. It's all there if you do his examples. Other stocks that you could look at along the same lines would be Fleetwood, FWD. Fleetwood again, in fact, sort of led the market, really, in a sense, downwards, because it topped in 2007, as did quite a number of property trusts, because they're land-related. It's always been my contention, land peaks first. Now, Fleetwood, I think, make caravans and rent out things for people to live in, is that right?
Yeah.
Mobile, yes. So there you go. Sensitive to sensitive to real estate, I would have thought. So they recovered quickly, but they bottomed before the rest of the market, yes? And then recovered quicker. That's how you know. You can reverse that in one sense. If I was to show a stock called AAC. Now this may or may not be valid, I don't know. Being an agricultural company. But what I wanted to show here was, you can see that in the fall, there's just been absolutely no recovery. So it's not a strong stock at the moment. But what the significance of what I wanted to try and show there is, when you go through, particularly at real estate lows, when you go through all your charts to find out which stocks are worthy of buying and things, you will see now, as you go through, you will see stocks, they're all different, but the stocks that go sideways end up going sideways for a year or two. Once they break that sideways move, you know precisely where they're going to go. The next thing they do, they will go back by half of the extreme move. All the stocks will move to their own individual time frame. But in the end, practically all of them in the index will eventually make that same pattern of the high in 07 to the low in 09 back to the midpoint of that extreme. They just take their different time frames to do it. Now you need to work out with the market and you're investing, you just work out which are the strongest stocks, which are the weakest stocks. And then you can set your watch list up so that you wait for those stocks to just, which ones will break out of accumulation and which don't. Yes? And the breaks of accumulation is what I tried to show last session, 2 weeks ago. Yeah? All right. With me so far? Yeah, okay. I think that's fairly self-explanatory, but that's what Gann was trying to do. All right, 17. I was going to mention KCN as well. Let's see whether that had anything to do with it. I only mentioned that just Kingsgate Consolidated in passing. It's a gold stock, Gold Explorer. Whatever else it does, you can see again, many gold stocks, if they showed that pattern, again, load early, way before the rest of the market, and then bounce back strongly. Okay? And again, I urge you to read the stuff when it breaks into all-time new highs. Things that break into all-time new highs, they are the things you should be watching, because that is where you see Gann at its best. Because once they break, the past highs turn into midpoints. Difference between from 2006 high down to the 2005 low, you just invert. Gives you the next top, up at $10. Alright? That's the thing to be doing. So, now we've got to work out where we go from here. That was in hindsight. That was the easy bit. Now, I did suggest, all right, in your handout, page number 5. I should pull it up as well, so let me. Can you pause that for a minute?
Would that work?